Every Monday afternoon, we talk a bit of golf, and we were jousting just aggressively with Marco for the right to be the ones to speak to Marcus Fraser today. But of course, the big boys went out. So Fraser's going to be on with the boys on the run home after 3 o'clock. Mark Hayes, Golf Australia Media Manager, is here for Kalua's Golf Club. What a weekend it's been, Hazy, for Australian golf. It could have been absolutely spectacular. It nearly was. I mean, it's been brilliant anyway. Where do you want to start?
Well, an apology to your listeners for running second place to Marcus Fraser as your alternative.
No, we're all fighting for him last night. And the big dogs always win out at times like this.
You're referring to Kari Webb quite getting over the line at the ISPS Handel Women's Australian Open. Put up a gallant fight and was overrun by Lydia Ko, the world number one, and just one of the most spectacular finishing rounds you'll ever see from someone we really didn't know about, but just played just one of the most unbelievably proficient rounds of golf under pressure that you've ever seen in Haruna Mura to win the title at the Grange.
Before you move on away from that, let's stay there, because we'll get to Adam Scott and we'll get to Marcus Fraser and Mark Leishman in a moment. But tell us about what this young lady's done. When Lydia, you've been there all week. When Lydia Ko started looming, everybody on course must have been thinking, oh, here we go. This is only going one way. But clearly, this young golfer who not many people had sort of heard too much about, she clearly had other intentions.
Yeah, so Kari was in the third last group, Lydia's in the second last group, and they start rolling in birdies early, and the buzz, there was a massive crowd at the Grange, and the buzz around hit everyone, like just affected everyone. They're thinking, oh, this is going to be a shootout with two great players, and, you know, one of those classic promoter's dreams cliches sort of bobbing up, and there's only one person who sort of didn't read the script, and this girl went past her, she was behind, and then she just started making birdie after birdie after birdie, and every time Lydia Ko rolled one in, Lydia Ko shot a spectacular 67 with a bogey up the last when she was really pressing. I reckon she had an eagle in her mind and she ended up taking a bogey and had a 67. But every time she birdied around the back nine, this massive roar goes up around the gallery and this girl's just bulletproof mentally and she just kept rolling them in. She rolled in 10-metre putts on the 16th and did it dead stiff on the 17th and just was immaculate. And then told us afterwards, I asked her through a translator, you know, were you ever nervous about being the world number one? She said, no, not nervous at all. And then she said, I asked her if she felt comfortable in the comparison with Lydia Ko. And she says, I'm better.
So I just thought, so where's she come from? Where's her, what's her, like in a nutshell, Hazy, what's her background?
Well, she turned pro at 17. She's 23 now, part Korean, part Japanese, lives in the States. And basically, she's been on the tour for 5 or 6 years, slowly getting better. And she led the previous two tournaments. A good form guide, form analysis would have probably found her. She led at 36 holes in Bahamas and Ocala, the two tournaments before the Australian Open, and just faded in the third round both times. But the caddy told me on Friday night, I wish I'd listened, the caddy told me that she was going like a winner. And she just has the game to compete. And, you know, you just cannot argue. It was so cool. It was ridiculous. Fantastic. So a name for the black book, Haruna Nomura.
Absolutely. So just from a local perspective, Kari Webb, still the competitive fires burner. We know what's driving her in 2016. She's just, you know, she's displayed, you know, great ticker down at 13th Beach and again here, you know, at the Grange. So she's not going anywhere in a hurry. Tell me about Sue O's final round, what you're going to read out of that. The fact that Stacey Keating produced a little bit more of what we hope we'd see more of over the last kind of 18 months. And Minji Lee, what can we expect from her in the short term as well?
Minji Lee was headless after a disappointing second round. I think it was one of the worst rounds she shot at the pro. So she shot 76 or 77. So it wasn't, you know, something horrendous. But her standards are really high. If you take out those probably half a dozen holes where she blew it apart on Friday afternoon, you know, she's right there. And I think we just expect to see her continually putting a name in contention. How many she wins each year, we don't know. If she won one or two a year, she'd be very high up in the rankings, obviously, and I think that's where she's headed. Stacey Keating was fantastic. She was three over through a couple of holes on the, or through a few holes on Thursday, And you sort of thought she was drifting the same way she did in the Vic Open, which really cut her up pretty badly. And she really showed a lot of bottle, Andy, and got up to 6-under after three rounds and was right in the mix. And I think she might have snuck a little peek at the leaderboard. She hasn't been there for a while. But she obviously showed signs there. But the big one, I reckon, for us as Australian golf fans there was Sue Oh.
I agree.
Just been battling a little bit with the putter. Yesterday she got paired with Brooke Henderson, who's just been
You're obsessing with her, by the way.
Oh, I am. It's a little bit scary, actually. Sorry for that.
No. God, she swings it.
The swing is just unbelievable. Jump onto the Women's Australian Open website and check out the story we did on that. And the swing, it's a freak show for all us with creaky old backs, how she gets around. She's actually swinging it like Jose Canseco at the bottom. It's like a big baseball swing. It's unbelievable.
That's amazing.
Anyway, the two of them played together. They're both, well, one's 18, one's 19, and they've gone really well. Clayton's on the bag, Mike Clayton. They were having a great time. Brooke Henderson, Scotty's her sister, who's also a really good tour player. And the four of them were getting around. And you can just sense the momentum building as they got around. And Henderson shot 67 and Sue shot 68. And the confidence that was coming out of her at the end was what we would have expected maybe 18 months ago. And it was back. And I really think that's a key indicator of where she's headed. And I think she's got bigger and better things ahead of her.
Well, there's a bit of an inevitable comparison that's going to happen between her and Minji Lee. And, you know, maybe Minji Lee's sort of stellar start to her professional career might have just put a bit of, you know, sort of unexpected pressure on, or unwanted or undeserved pressure on Sue. I don't know whether the reflective glow just got to her a little bit.
You're spot on, Andy. You're absolutely spot on. And maybe even if we don't make the comparison, Sue does. They were neck and neck through their amateur careers, you know, trading blows metaphorically, obviously, and just they're great mates. And I think Sue expected to qualify on the LPGA Tour at the same Q school 2 years ago and didn't get it done, and then didn't get it done this year. And pressure is building up on her. It's ridiculous to think of someone who's been so successful as a 19-year-old having that sort of pressure on her. But, you know, she has high expectations and she's a good enough player to do it. I think maybe, just maybe now, that she's actually fired shots on the last round of a major LPGA tournament that she can believe and she can really get there.
Yeah, she's a very, very fine player. Hazy, while that was all going on, at around about the same time, this is one of the great feel-good stories of Australian golf, I reckon. Marcus Fraser just churns it out, you know, top 20s, top 25s, top 10s, week in, week out, wherever he plays, that's what he does. But he only won twice on the European Tour, and I know that it had been starting to get to him a bit, that he wanted to start winning, and he knows that's what's going to sort of define his career, and he's going to be joining Mark Owen half after three. The way he closed that weekend out, a bogeyless weekend over in Kuala Lumpur, and to make clutch putts on 17 and 18 to win, there haven't been many more well-received and popular wins in Australian golf in the last couple of years than this one, I don't reckon.
Every SEN listener is familiar with Marcus Fraser's work just because of his generosity of spirit and his willingness to share and talk and come on air. And, you know, a lot of other guys don't do it as well as he does. That's just a fact. And he's just a ripping bloke. Hits it not much further than the average good club player and is mentally just, you know, he's bulletproof too. Yeah. I keep using that word. But it's a win for little golfers, and that puts a smile on every golf fan's heart, I reckon. It's just sensational to see him win. And the way he did it under that sort of clutch situation there, and now the guy just sort of taking the gas a little bit, it sort of was justice for a few of the mishaps that happened to him over the years. And he's not a spring chicken, Andy. I know you would have said that to him if he had him on air. So, you know, he's got to start racking up those wins. And, you know, he said afterwards that, you know, his kids keep saying, when are you going to bring home another trophy, Dad? When are you going to bring home a trophy?
Well, so they're going to like this one. It's a dirty, big tiger's head. It's a huge, rotten mongrel of a thing. And I don't know how he's going to get it on. I know he's already in Perth. He arrived in Perth this morning for the big one this weekend. So, but this has opened some doors for him. This has got him into some tournaments around the world now. It gets him to Doral, and I think it gets him to Akron. So, you know, it's a real opportunity for Fraser, and we're all delighted for him. Hey, Hazy, we've got to get a quick break out of the way, but just it would be remiss of us not to have a quick word about Adam Scott, who nearly won this morning. Nearly won this morning. A lot to like about what Scotty did at Riviera.
Heaps to like about it, and most noticeably, obviously, the putting. Scotty hasn't been in contention there for quite a while. It's come a bit of a shock. Like, he just had such a horrific year with the putting stats last year. And, you know, to see him back, and obviously, Andy, as we've talked about the last couple of weeks, this is the swing that really starts defining what's happening for Augusta.
So obviously it's disappointing for us as Aussie golf fans to see that stinking left-hander win it again.
Yeah, but not happy about that. Not happy about that.
But that aside, to see Scotty and also Leash winding into a bit of form, and they're heading towards courses they love. They genuinely love going to Augusta. I think that's a huge portent of what's ahead in about 5 or 6 weeks' time.
Well, the more they can play in the same group with one another, the more we like it as Australian golf fans, Hazy. I know we've got the boss about to join us. The CEO is going to join us on the other side of the break to have a chat about a fantastic initiative that professional young golfers in Australia are supporting. To you and the GA team over there at the Grange, mate, another job really, really well done. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Danny. See you back in the studio.
Mark Hayes, Golf Australia Media Manager, here for Kerr Lewis Golf Club. If you want a hit at a fine and underrated golf course in terrific nick at the moment, get down to Kerr Lewis. Just been speaking golf with Hazy, and it was a fantastic weekend for Australian golf. It could have been even better with a couple of rolls of the ball going left instead of right. Steve Pitt is the CEO of Golf Australia. A lot to be excited about as we say good afternoon to you, Steve.
G'day, Andy. How are you?
I'm going well. Congratulations on what sounded like another fantastic event over there at the Grange. Another just a magnificent golfing experience for everybody who was part of it all. But you've announced in the middle of it all this Give Back program, which I think is just, it says a lot about the players and the people that are coming through your Golf Australia programs. Can you tell us what the Give Back program is all about?
Yeah, I guess in its very simplest form, Andy, it's an agreement between the players and GA, and the way you'd put it simply is we're going to do whatever we can to make you guys superstars of the game, and we'll invest as much as we can into doing that. And if in turn that you get there and you earn, you know, a really strong income, we'd like to see some of that come back to the game. And that's been a conversation that we've had with players, with parents, with managers. And overwhelmingly, the response is, yep, that's a great deal. I mean, that's what we're aiming for. If you can help us get there and we can benefit from that, we'd love to put something back into the game. So it's about building a culture as much as anything. Let's actually support the game and make the game stronger in Australia.
Isn't it? I mean, that's fantastic that they would go along with that. I mean, it's an individual sport. They're professional athletes. They've got, you know, managers and you know, other people around the place are probably saying, no, you don't have to give anything back. You've done enough for them and all the rest of it. But so when the idea was initially couched, did you think that there would be any resistance amongst the players to commit and support to this sort of program?
Yeah, we did, I guess, because it's something new, and we're probably worried about the managers as much as anyone. But I have to say, I think we're really fortunate with the managers that we have in golf, that they understand the role that GA plays in developing these players. And they were actually pretty supportive. So some of them were sounding boards about how we could move forward from it. I guess I have been surprised that we didn't reach more bumps along the way, that there weren't sort of places where we had to change our thinking. But what I would say from the start, we wanted to make sure it wasn't going to be too onerous on players, that it wasn't going to put pressure on them too early in their careers, so they don't have a good year and say, right, I have to give back even though I might have a terrible year next year and be in a pretty tough position. And we kept the amounts reasonably low. We made sure that no one would ever have to pay back more than what was invested into them. And I guess that's as part about building a culture as much as anything. If you make these benchmarks too high, well, then it does start to become seen as being a bit onerous or a tax. But I think we've put in place a system where hopefully players, so you know what, that's what I'm expected to give back through the program, but I'm actually going to do more than that, and I'm going to do it through the duration of my career rather than just, you know, 5 stipulated years.
It says a couple of things, I reckon, Stephen, talking to Steve Pitt, the CEO of Golf Australia. It says that the character of the people that, you know, you're identifying on the way through to become part of, you know, your GA pathways is, you know, is finding the right people in the first place to bring into those sorts of programs. But it's also saying that, suggesting to me that there is this inherent gratitude that amongst the players that are being produced, that, you know, they're thankful for the opportunities they've been given, and they are, you know, by agreeing to be part of a program like this, they're saying, you know, I know you guys went beyond the call for me, and, you know, if there's any way I can sort of help on the way back, then happy to do it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I'd include the parents in that mix as well. We've got a lot of great parents in golf, and they're part of those early discussions around, you know, when kids get into the national squad, we involve their parents as well in those discussions, and they have to buy in as well. If you have parents that don't buy in, I think that causes problems, and you know, we've probably seen that perhaps in some other sports. So golf, I think we're fortunate and we've worked really hard on that. I think from Golf Australia's perspective too, the mentality around producing elite golfers has actually changed. I think back in the days, it used to be once you turn pro, you were dead to us and we weren't interested in you. I think now we've tried to build a lifelong relationship with players, and we're seeing that through with the players that have come through like Minji Lee and Cameron Smith and Oliver Goss and these sort of kids who are, you know, in the early stages of their career. There's still a really strong relationship there, and they understand we're there to help them right through their careers. So, and Cam Smith is you know, a great example of the mentality of giving back, because he's already set up the Cam Smith Scholarship, which is just an incredible thing for a guy who's been professional less than 2 years.
So he's kicking in about 12 and a half grand a year to that. Is that around about the right number?
It'll actually be more. He's kicking in sort of that amount for one specific athlete to start with, and that's Louis Dobler, who's a young Queensland player. And Cam, you know, wants to help this young fella coming through have some great opportunities and get the best, you know, sort of developmental experience he can. So, you know, I think from our perspective, I think we feel like the game's in a really good position at the moment. There's some positive signs in the participation space. There's a few challenges there that we still need to solve, but there are a number of positive signs. And in terms of the elite area, we've just got a really strong group of players who either just turned pro. We've got some great young players on the horizon that are coming through the ranks. I think if we can build that depth, particularly around the girls, we're going to set Australia up as a powerhouse for international golf for the next 20 or 30 years.
It's not too big a stretch to kind of feel that you're very, very, very close to that. Steve Pitt, CEO of Golf Australia. Last one on the way out. Is it an acknowledgement that money's, you know, the money's required to develop, and you know, maybe the monies that you may be used to getting from sponsors or government or whoever it might be, as Henry Nicholls falls another wicket for the Australians, isn't it an acknowledgement that money's tougher to get these days, Steve, that you need to find alternate avenues if you want to continue to provide, you know, the developmental tools that you've been affording these players in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things we've done is been proactive around getting some outside private support. And that our rookie program is driven by that. We've got benefactors who are incredibly generous, who have a vision for how they want to see the program rolled out. And without their support, it just wouldn't have happened. They have been terrific in terms of driving the program. So we're so grateful for that. But I think for all sports now, you've got to look beyond government funding. Certainly golf does. We get a reasonable chunk of high-performance money, but a lot less than a lot of other sports. So you've got to look for other means to actually do that. And I think golf has been successful. If you look at NSOs around the country, golf's in the top sort of one or two in being able to generate additional revenue from other sources beyond government. So I think we're fortunate in that space.
I think it's a fantastic program. I think the players need to be given a big pat on the back. Those who are making it, happy to help out those who want to by dipping into their own kick to do it. I think it's a fantastic thing. Steve, good luck with it. And we applaud the players for, you know, so universally agreeing to it. I think it's a fantastic program. Thanks for joining us on the show and telling us a bit about it.
Thanks, Andy. Pleasure. All the best.
Good on you. Steve Pitt, CEO of Golf Australia.